The views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Thank you very much, and welcome back to The Drive Time. This is Hour 3 Wednesday. It's our live version of Consider This Live with Rob Washburn. He's my regular co-host here on Wednesdays. Rob, welcome to the studio.
Good to be here, Dave.
Today, we're going to be talking about the federal budget, and we're just awaiting a telephone call from Kim Rudd. She is working today in Ottawa, so she's going to call us from her office there, and we're going to talk to her about the budget, the breakdown of the budget, and how it impacts us here in Northumberland County directly. What are some of the benefits that we are going to see? A lot of questions we have to ask. Before we get to that, though, here are the Beatles with Taxman here on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you.
Taxman from 1966 off the Revolver album, one of the, in my opinion, one of the best, if not the best Beatles album out there. Joining me, as I say, in studio, Rob Washburn, and we're waiting for Kim to give us a call on the line, and we'll go live to her when she calls in. Rob, we're talking about the budget.
Yeah, we are, Dave, and some highlights. I know people have probably heard this all day and most of yesterday, but deficit being projected at $29.4 billion for this year, and the government is not expecting a surplus before the next election.
Mm-hmm.
The debt is going to increase by about $113 billion over that period of time, but the debt-to-GDP ratio, which is that important factor, it looks like we're going to stay steady at about 32%. So a lot of people talking about the legacy that's going to be left for future generations. Growth, the budget is being based on a 0.4% annual growth, which is pretty low. Although this morning, I don't know about you, Dave, but I heard some really interesting comments being made about the projections and the price of oil.
Mm-hmm.
And in some calculations, it's being based on a $40 a barrel figure, and in others, a $25 a barrel figure. So that might impact upon how much of the deficit we're going to have in the upcoming months.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the criticisms we heard actually all day today from several pundits, mostly conservative pundits, frankly, and some NDP pundits, saying that, okay, well, you know, if you're setting the benchmark too low, you know, are you just doing that because you want to cover your bases, or are they setting the benchmark too low so that they can come out looking like superstars at the end of the fiscal year? And again, because oil's not going to stay where it is right now. It's currently trading just about $49 U.S. a barrel for West Texas Intermediate, but that's not the crude that we sell. The stuff from Alberta is actually about half of that. It's about $25 a barrel, if that. So if they're basing their dollar value on $40 U.S. a barrel, then wonderful. That's a great thing. But we do have Kim Rudd on the line, and we are going to go to her right now. And Kim, welcome to the show.
Dave, thank you very much. Good to talk to you. And hi, Rob. How are you?
Good, Kim. Thanks for joining us.
No, happy to. I'm going to apologize in advance. I hope there's no noise. The Canadian chicken farmers and egg and turkey producers are in Ottawa today. So I'm just finishing up a meeting with them, and so it's a bit noisy.
What was their take on the budget?
Good. A couple of things. I mean, we have, because it's a national association, we have members here from Northwest Territories who are excited about some of the investments in our budget around the North particularly, but in direct relationship to agriculture. And I'm sorry, I think it's $70 million, but I will tell you it's off the top of my head. I can't remember exactly. In terms of innovation for agriculture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I met with a number of agriculture folks on last Friday morning in Coburg, and it was one of the things they highlighted for me they were looking for. They're looking to be more efficient. Innovation was one of the things on the top of their list.
Mm-hmm.
They're excited about the high-speed internet because, as we know, it's important. We know there's a direct relationship between economic development and connectivity, and certainly for farmers, that's very true. So there's lots of good things in there, and they're pretty happy.
Well, I'm going to let Rob start us off with the questions today.
Sure.
Well, what are you most proud of, Kim, when you look at this budget?
You know, I think I'm most proud of the fact that our government and the Prime Minister particularly, with his leadership, has said it's not about looking at what's going to get us to the next election, you know, which is typically how politics are done. Mm-hmm. And 1 year, 2 year, 3 year. This is about a vision for growth for Canada. And we know it's going to take some time. We know it's not going to happen overnight. We know there are some tough choices to be made. But I'm most proud of the fact that we've made the commitment about the future. And it really is, the response that we're getting has been excellent. It mm-hmm. really has been. I was, of course, sitting in the House during the budget when the minister delivered it.
So are you sitting there?
Yeah, I was sitting there. And Chief Perry Bellegarde, of course, was in the gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the look on his face when the announcement came about the commitment for Indigenous people, and it was moving. It really was. It was very emotional.
Mm-hmm. Well, the First Nations are saying this is a historic budget. This is a great first step. There are a number, though, like Pam Palmateer, for instance, who are saying it doesn't go far enough.
And to be fair, I guess, to those who say that, I think Chief Bellegarde's comment was it's even more than Kelowna was.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a recognition. There has been such a, this is not something that has just happened over the last couple of years. This has been a challenge for Indigenous communities for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is not going to be solved in one budget.
No.
But it is the message that it is, committing to the ending of boil water advisories within 5 years. It has been a blight, I believe, on our country. That should not happen in our country.
No, absolutely.
And the investments in education, among other things. So it is the our commitment,
mm-hmm,
to moving forward. Not saying it's where we want to be, but it's our commitment to moving forward, and it's significant.
When you talk about the Indigenous aspects of the budget, the $8.4 billion, and it's going to water and education, how does that impact Alderville, which would be our mm-hmm, community? Because we don't hear about boil water advisories from there, and we know that they've got a very good functional school up there.
Yep. Oh, that's a good question, Rob. And it's not, don't forget, we have two Indigenous communities now because we have Hiawatha as well.
Yep.
Hiawatha does have some water issues, which is interesting. And actually, I was up in Keene last week and talking to the chief, and he brought that issue up again for me. So, mm-hmm, so I'm just sorry. I'm moving towards a little less, I hope, a little less noisy. It's interesting because while it doesn't have what we would see as a direct impact in that the Indigenous, we're not seeing the same things that you would see up in the northern community.
Of course.
It is still part of their, they see it, rightly so, frankly, as part of our responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And they see it as a recognition. And I guess I would say, as Canadians, if one part of our country is suffering, we all feel it. And it's the same with Indigenous communities. So it doesn't matter where the Indigenous community is. They want to see their broader community, I guess, nationally,
sure,
have those opportunities. And we know that in terms of education, we know that Indigenous youth are the fastest growing youth as a sector is not the right word, but as a group.
Yeah.
And so education is extremely important.
Kim, the Canada Child Benefit is a big change there. It's $6,400 a year for children under six, $5,400 a year for children 6 to 18 years old. A pretty big investment there. And also a change for the Guaranteed Income Supplement, adding another $947 a year. Two big groups in our community, obviously families and seniors. Those sound like some pretty big numbers, but I was doing some research today, and just in something as simple as groceries, we're finding that, the cost of groceries last year went up $345, and they're expected to go up another $245 again this year. How much difference are these kinds of programs going to make to people in our community when they're facing increases just in food alone like that, or in hydro bills or in property taxes?
Well, and it's part of the broader vision and the broader conversation. There are always factors beyond anyone's control.
Mm-hmm.
And climate change, frankly, is causing some of the increase in the food prices, some of the increase in insurance, as we know, that people have to pay. It's also the general, how do I say, very low growth that our country has experienced. Our economy is not rising as fast as our costs are rising.
Mm-hmm.
So what does it mean? It means that families will actually have more. As things rise, will that adjust itself? It will. because that's just, you know, it's just, it's about the numbers. But mm-hmm. the reality is these are non-taxable dollars. And they, in lots of instances, and from a local perspective, one of the things I really see, and you will remember this from the campaign, and I said it many times, is that our communities, our downtowns, our businesses need people to have disposable income in order to spend it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the things, you know, whether it's the single mom that now gets to buy her kids new clothes to go back to school, or whether they get to buy the, you know, maybe a new car because their 12-year-old one is on fumes. It's the opportunity to help people, not just in the middle class, but, you know, as we say, people striving to get in the middle class. And it's not a, you know, someone said to me, oh, well, that's just, you know, a soundbite. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
You and I both know many people, I would argue, I certainly do, that are living paycheck to paycheck. And this extra money will help get them to where they have more opportunity to get where they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I will say is it is going to lift over 315,000 children out of poverty. That's the difference it's going to make. And that's huge. You mentioned the GIS, and I think this is really interesting. In our riding, as you know, we have a huge senior population.
Mm-hmm.
And I may be off by a percent or two, but in 5 years, our riding, 54-ish percent are going to be seniors.
Yep.
And of that 54%-ish, 52%-ish are going to be without pension plans.
Mm-hmm.
So increases in GIS, you know, working towards increases in Canada Pension at some point with negotiations with the provinces, all those things will help those people directly in our riding.
Well, and that's a really good point. I want to touch on another aspect of that in just a moment, but we got to take a quick break. When we come right back, we'll have more of our conversation. On the line from Ottawa with us is Kim Rudd. In the studio is Rob Washburn. I'm Dave Glover. You're listening to Consider This Live on Northumberland 89.7, all part of the treats here at the Drive Time on Truly Local Radio. Please stick around. We will be right back. Okay, and welcome back. With us online is Kim Rudd. Now, we've been talking about putting more money in the pockets of Canadians. You're talking about, which is something I appreciate because, you know, as I said to you in the past, you can't take a tax credit to the store and buy groceries, but you can take cold, hard cash. So this government is actually writing checks, which is kind of nice. But
yes,
one,
and we have to remember that all the non-refundable tax credits that came out
mm-hmm.
in the previous government were only good if you actually made taxable income.
Exactly. No, exactly. And that's the point I was trying to get at with the tax breaks. The other thing, too, about the benefit that was under the previous regime, which this government has gotten rid of, that was taxable income as well. I had a conversation with somebody recently who said, oh, well, I don't know, I got $900 a month more. And I said, well, yeah, but that's taxable income. You're going to pay tax on that. But now we've talked about seniors. You've reduced the OAS stage.
Let's talk about post-secondary education.
The one group that did not get representation in this mm-hmm. budget was single folks, single people out there who are, you know, still struggling themselves day to day. What is the government proposing for those people, people without kids, people who aren't seniors?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think, Dave, as we've said, this is our first budget.
Mm-hmm.
This is our first, step towards the vision.
Mm-hmm.
We're already working on what the next steps of the next budget will be. But the thing I would say, the investments in infrastructure, the investments in communities, in social housing, for an example, they do help people who need to get back to work that aren't working or what I would call are underemployed, as we all know.
Mm-hmm.
The affordable housing, the commitment to building, and let's not forget refurbishing, because we have a lot of social housing buildings and you know, whether it be apartments or houses or what have you, that are in indeed serious need of repair.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of that. So So I would say in terms of job creation, in terms of, you know, we did the tax cuts for the middle class.
Mm-hmm.
That's not specifically to families. That certainly applies to single people as well. So I think we have to look at it at a broader scope. The other thing, and this sort of will take me to post-secondary education. I mean, a couple of things that we've done I'm extremely proud of.
Mm-hmm.
One is the increased grants to students. I think a doubling, or no, 50% increase. Sorry, it's been a very long day, and you may know that we had a member of parliament die this morning.
Right.
And his office was next to mine.
Oh, sorry.
So it's been a bit of a day.
Right.
The increase in the grant, but also the fact that, you know, I was in post-secondary education. It's tough. Often when people graduate from post-secondary education, they get a temporary job while they're looking for their new job, as we all know. And if they don't have experience, they're always starting at the bottom, at the bottom of the pay scale.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to pay their loan back. They're going to make at least $25,000 a year.
Right, I did see that.
That's a big thing.
Yeah, no, that is a huge deal. But with regards to single individuals, really at this point, this is being the first kick at the can for the Liberals, as it were. At this point, it's fair to say not so much then, right?
Again, I'll go back to the increase in jobs, the increase in transit contribution. It depends what you look at. If we're looking at a single individual
mm-hmm.
with no sort of attachment to anything else, but I'm not looking at that. I'm looking at the single person who's looking for a job. I'm looking at the single person mm-hmm. who is looking to be able to get to work on time, is looking for decent housing. And the other thing the minister committed to was continuing his work and dialogue with the provinces around the enhancement of the Canada Pension
mm-hmm.
Plan. And I personally think when I go back to my statistics I gave you, although I'm going to caveat, they're a couple percent off possibly, is that we know if a couple things. We need to get people back to work, a decent paying job. That yeah. will help grow our economy, no question.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing it does is, or the other thing that we have to recognize is if we don't find a way to help people save for their retirement, the GIS and the OAS portions of our contributions are only going to go up.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, right.
So there's lots, don't get me wrong, there is still lots of work to be done,
mm-hmm.
no question.
Jim, one of the things that may seem a little confusing just to the average individual is when you talk about infrastructure spending and everybody ties that with job creation and stimulating the economy, yet if I was just a normal person sitting at home, I'd think, well, why is it so good that there's going to be a lot of construction jobs? Because we talk about affordable housing. Those are construction mm-hmm. jobs, new highways, new water treatment plants, new bridges, new roads. All those things are construction jobs. That's the perception. Explain for our readers, just in very basic terms, mm-hmm. how does that stimulate the economy and give a job to somebody who,
sure.
say, is looking for work in our downtown or, you know, looking
yep.
for a manufacturing job in Port Hope?
Yep. Well, so let me give you an example. So in social infrastructure, the building of senior homes are part of that
mm-hmm.
broader envelope.
Yep.
So if you build a senior home, a long-term care facility, whatever it may be, retirement home, whatever it may be that meets the needs of the seniors in that community, the community decides are important, that creates jobs because that facility is needing people to run them.
Okay.
If you look at, if you look at the construction, and this is something I think people don't think of.
Mm-hmm.
When you build, let's say you build a, I'm throwing this out, I'm not saying anybody's doing, but let's say you build a water treatment plant or you build a bridge or a road
mm-hmm.
or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about construction workers. It's about health and safety workers. It's about accountants. It's about administrative staff. It's about all of those things that supports that work is being done. So there is a change. And one of the things that will be happening is, and the Prime Minister has made this very clear, this budget is really about, not all of it, but certainly a significant part of it, is about addressing those immediate needs. You and I know the infrastructure deficit in this country is massive.
Mm-hmm.
And there are bridges, there are buildings, there are many things that need immediate attention.
Yep.
So applications that address those will be, you know, be looked at for their immediacy, if I can say that.
Sure.
But that's not to say what we want communities to do. And as I've met with some of the municipalities and we'll be going out meeting with more of them,
mm-hmm.
I'm encouraging them to have a plan for what you need now, what you, you know, what's the next step.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things the Prime Minister has said is we want people to look at not just creating the job to build it, but how will this, in fact, continue to grow the economy? And that's your point. And the high-speed mm-hmm. internet is a perfect example of that.
Sure.
If we expand that, we expand the opportunity for businesses. We expand the opportunity for education. We expand the opportunity for all of those things.
You had an opportunity too. I mean, small business is a very important part of our local economy.
True.
And we didn't see the kind of reduction in small business tax that was promised during the election. Why was there not more emphasis maybe on that area where you could see maybe possibly jobs being created by small mm-hmm. business?
Well, it's interesting. But one of the things, as you may know, the finance department went from coast to coast to coast, met with Canadians. There was an online portal. And what we heard from small business is what they really need are customers.
Mm-hmm.
And so the decision was made. We cut it a bit, certainly not as much, you know, as anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
But we made a decision based on feedback we got
mm-hmm.
that, and I'll go back to my comment, if people have disposable income, they're shopping in our downtown store.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're buying a new car. So the decision was made, let's put the emphasis on growing the economy, getting people back to work, and then small businesses, in fact, by virtue of the fact that they are businesses, in fact, the Retail Council of Canada this morning met with Minister Morneau, and I don't have the quote in my head. As I said, it's been a long day, but I'm paraphrasing. But it was basically that they were very excited about us putting the money to growing the economy and creating jobs, because in the retail sector, they need people to have jobs to buy their goods.
Right. Well, you can't have a consumer economy if people can't afford to consume, right?
Exactly. So, you know, it's always about choices. And as I say, you know, this is our first budget. There will be another budget and another budget.
Mm-hmm.
and the thing that we command to do is continuing to have those conversations with people, organizations, associations. You know, one of the things, and while it doesn't affect our riding directly, although it does through Cameco, Cameco really wouldn't be affected, but the concept is there. The mining exploration companies, those companies who work to find the new mines, which mm-hmm. do create jobs, the 15% exploration tax credit was in there. That was really good news, especially to the more rural communities and communities that do mining. I do have to go, but I want to just leave you with one thing. And you'll be on the almost cutting edge. There will be a notice come out next week, but I am honored on behalf of the Government of Canada to be on a trade mission to China in a week.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a trade mission on nuclear. And I will be accompanied by OPG, by Cameco, by UOIT, among many others. So it is all about promoting, for me personally, it's about promoting our various, this is nuclear, but there will be others, I'm sure, promoting the excellence that is Canada in various sectors, and nuclear is one of them. And the supply, I don't know if you know this, but the supply chain for nuclear is back in Canada.
Yep.
So that's exciting news, and I'm thrilled to be going. And I hope once I get back, I'll be able to come on your show and tell you all of, sort of the news from Beijing.
Well, that sounds good. We wish you all good luck in there. Too bad we didn't have more time to get to the meat and potatoes of some of these other issues. But good luck in China. Rob and I are both extra large, so if you want to bring us back a shirt, that'd be wonderful. And Kim, I want to thank you for spending a little time with us today. I know you're very busy.
Happy to. And, you know, I'm happy to come back in. I'm sorry today was it really just has been
one of those days.
Challenging day, yes. Mm-hmm. And one of our other members of parliament, Arnold Chan, you may have heard, has had a recurrence, and that was today too. So it's just been, it's been very busy, and our hearts are going out to the families of our members who have passed and who are you know, going through some challenging health issues, as well as Mauro Boulanger. So it's been a day of reflection as well, and I'm honored to be here and be able to support my colleagues on all sides of the aisle as we go through this.
And we'll look forward to talking to you when you get back.
Thanks again, Kim, on behalf of our listeners.
Okay, thanks.
We'll talk to you again.
So that, of course, was Kim Rudd, the Member of Parliament for Northumberland Peterborough South. Again, not a lot of real action for single working Canadians. But again, this is sort of it's the one group in the demographic that can be, you know, sort of set aside as something unto itself that, you know, you sink or swim by your own powers as a single individual in most economies. It would have been nice to see something happen. I mean, given the economic downturn that happened almost 10 years ago now, the fact that many, many people are still unemployed or underemployed, as Kim reported, I mean, I can point my finger to at least a dozen people I know who haven't had any real consequential work in more than 2 years. And the problem they're going to face, of course, is that now they have a 2-year hole in their resume. They're looking for employment. I didn't see a lot more money being allocated for youth employment services, for instance. But if you're not a youth, you don't have access to those benefits anyway. What do you think the federal government can do in terms of opening up employment insurance, Rob? I mean, part of the problem for people in Ontario, we know that prior to this budget anyway, 70% of folks who were unemployed in Ontario didn't even qualify for employment insurance because of the way the rules have changed. Now, the rules apparently are going to be changed back, but that doesn't help the people that have been unemployed or underemployed for any length of time. And they, by the virtue of their non-qualification, don't have access to these job retraining programs or you know, re-education programs and all of that. Is that something you think the government could have helped people with?
It's such a complex thing, Dave, and I don't mean to sort of try to sidestep what you're talking about, but I think that this goes to the heart of it, is that Kim, when she talks about things and when they design these budgets, they're seen as being a pan-national document. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things, she was talking about mining and things that are really far away and foreign to us. And I think part of our struggle in that interview was to try and get things down to how does this affect us on Main Street? That's really the question that Canadians are asking themselves right now is, you know, it's fantastic to talk about boil water advisories, but how does that affect Alderville? And you know, she was good to sort of put that in context with the Hiawatha Reserve up there on the north shore of Rice Lake. But those are the things that are really at the heart of it. I mean, it's great we're going to get some new roads, a new bridge. Maybe Brighton's going to get a new water treatment facility. All those things are super positive. But again, how does that roll out so that it helps our people on Main Street?
And to respond in a way I believe that she was highlighting, her assertion and the assertion of the government is if we get more skilled trades workers back to work. I mean, we're not just talking about construction. Mm-hmm. We're talking about welding. We're talking about millwrights. Sure. We're talking about civil engineers. We're talking about people that are trained to work in major infrastructure projects. So there's all of that. That puts money in their pockets. Mm-hmm. And by putting money in their pockets, by extrapolation, that's going to put more money in the cash registers of the local businesses. That's the assertion. That's what this government has talked about.
But I guess from that standpoint, going back to your points, is how do we see these things rolling out locally when the vision for it is across Canada? Those EI changes are aimed at Alberta. They're aimed at the East Coast. They're aimed places other than Ontario. which
well, but Ontarians will still qualify, under the new rules.
What was the
intensification of they referred to the intensification in 12 specific regions in the country, three of those being, well, almost all of them being in Alberta, primarily. I mean, Calgary's got a 12.5% unemployment rate right now.
But we're talking about 50,000 more people being eligible for employment benefits. Mm-hmm. So how big an impact is that going to have in Northumberland? Right. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you, and I understand how it fits in a larger perspective. But, you know, that's what we're talking about. And some of these investments, I mean, $120 billion over 10 years. Well, how does that roll out each year, and how much can be done, and how much can be scheduled, and how much can be accomplished? And I understand all of that.
That was some of the criticism put forth today by the First Nations. I mean, they're saying, okay, $3.4 billion. But the bulk of that spending is going to be on the back end. It's going to be in, you know, in 2 years. First, the first tranche doesn't really come out at any significance until after next year's budget. So, again, we're talking about one of the problems you and I have with the previous regime, and quite frankly with most previous regimes, is this idea of, okay, well, it's this much money, but you're going to get this much up front, just under $1 billion up front, and then 1.4, and then another. And because what they're essentially doing is using post-dated checks to provide services. And that's one of the reasons why the budget deficit seems to be so high, is because a lot of it is a projection based on certain government revenue streams, which, you know, if they are lowballing, could be significantly higher.
The other thing that sort of strikes me is, you know, when they talk about for seniors, the changes in the guaranteed income supplement of $947 a year, that works out to just under $80 a month. How much increased spending power does that give a senior when they're facing, as I was saying earlier, it blew me away when I started looking at it in detail, but $325 a year increase in the food bill in 2015, a $345 more increase in 2016. How far is that $80 going to go? Now, it's great that it may be being spent locally, but is it going to be enough to help and to really ease the burden of seniors in our community?
Well, that's a good point. And a number of other things are going to be coming, too, not just the 947 guaranteed income supplement, but other different tax breaks for their lower income brackets. And there are going to be other aspects. So that 947 is just that portion of it. They are projecting there'll be other aspects of it that will put more money in the pockets as well. But I guess the real goal here is that they've gotten rid of a number of tax credits, which, to my mind, is to the credit of the government, because, as you know, Kim and I said a moment ago, you can't take a tax credit to the bank, and it's only a tax credit if you earned enough income to qualify for that tax credit. So you got things like that. You got non-refundable tax credits, which I'd like to see them get rid of. So there's all kinds of things out there. What I've noticed is that there seems to be a number of times where the federal government could have increased general revenues by shifting some aspects of the tax pool, i.e. CEO bonus structures and things like that not being taxed at the same rate as, if you will, regular working stiff Canadians who are taxed on an hourly rate. I mean, the people who are being paid hourly, the people who work in what are considered real jobs, if you ask my grandfather, those people are still having to carry the bulk of the burden. The folks that are making the big money at the very top are not. They're going to continue to get their bonuses. They're going to get their tax-free in investment incomes and all of those other things, which are great. But even the great financial experts of Wall Street are saying, look, we've got to put money into the pockets. We've got to take money from those people who aren't going to spend it, and we've got to put it back into the pockets of the people who are going to spend it. Now, the government has done, to some degree, they've done that, but they haven't gone far enough, in my opinion. And also, by the same token, we know that people at the lower end of the financial spectrum tend to spend in excess of 100, 106 to 10% of their total income. So we're talking about a group of people who are consumers, who are spenders, who are being, in my opinion, unfairly burdened by the current tax system. And yet folks who have more disposable income, the folks who are only spending 5 to 8% of their disposable income in the economy, those people are actually left with more money in their pockets. So I think there was an opportunity on the part of this government to try and to fix some of that that inequities, and they didn't do it.
Well, and it was part of the campaign, if you remember. I mean, those were things that were raised as being significant parts. They wanted to see that sort of redistribution take place, and especially when, you know, we know that some of these wealthy people are taking their money offshore.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, how hard would it have been to close some of those gaps and to bring some of that equity? So is that, do you see that, Dave, as an unfulfilled promise then?
I see it as a missed opportunity. I don't know if it's an unfulfilled promise. I think one of the other things that we need to remember too, and it's fair for us to be Monday morning quarterbacks in this situation, but nobody expected there to be such a huge hole in the Federal Reserves. Nobody expected that government revenues would be as low as they are. Unfortunately, the only people who actually had access to the real numbers was the ruling government. You know, and I know this is, people are saying, oh, well, that's just an excuse. It may be just an excuse, but it's a valid excuse. You know, one of the things you and I talked about before going into air is the Liberals are projecting a $29.4 billion deficit mm-hmm. as a result of this budget.
Right.
But it's not unfair to say that $18.4 billion of that deficit was left in, as a whole by the previous regime because mm-hmm. of shifting tax burdens, because of allowing large income earners to get away with tax loopholes. I mean, we've all heard about what's happened with KPMG and some of their wealthier customers. So it was a real a missed opportunity as far as I'm concerned. And the fact that the previous regime and the members that are still sitting in the House are saying, well, they're lying to you. We actually left a surplus. I mean, anybody who believes that is obviously drinking the Kool-Aid, because the long and short of it is, I don't care what government you are, you don't build an $18.4 billion deficit in 4 months of being in government. That doesn't happen. All right. It's not like the Liberals went on a spending spree. This is the first opportunity they've had to actually write some checks. Mm. Prior to this, all they were doing was cashing post-dated checks that were written by the previous government. And like I said to the listeners earlier, you know, eventually those checks have to be cashed. And if they're cashed by the next government, which in this case is what happened, then it's the next government that ends up looking like the spendthrift. So they end up looking like the people who wasted your money, while the other regime, who are no longer in government, get to stand off scot-free and go, no, we didn't leave a hole. Well, you know, Joe Oliver knew when he delivered his budget last year that the projected so-called surplus was based on $50 a barrel oil. And oil hasn't been $50 a barrel for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's disingenuous of the previous regime and those members that are still sitting in the House, Andrew Scheer, I'm pointing the finger at you, to say that the Liberals created this huge problem. It's fair in my mind to say that of the Liberal budget itself, they've increased the deficit by $10 billion. Mm-hmm. The other $19.4 billion mm-hmm. are checks that are being cashed by this government that were written by the previous government. And I don't think that's an unfair assessment. We're going to take our last break of the hour, listeners. You are listening to The Drive Time right here on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. I want to thank my guest, Kim Rudd, for calling in. Still with me in the studio, though, is Rob Washburn, my regular co-host for Wednesdays. We will be right back. And welcome back to The Drive Time. I'm Dave Glover. We got about 6 minutes left to put this baby in the can. What was your big takeaway from the budget, Rob?
I think the fact that the deficits are so large, and I think that is a really hard thing for Canadians to kind of get around their heads. I think we've been so used to no deficit or zero deficit and cutbacks for the last 10 years.
Okay, but we've
and reduction had, in but services.
The previous government, they never had a balanced budget in the 9 years they were in power. They were always deficit budgets.
But I think the whole mentality of cutting back,
mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden it's spending, and it just what hits me and the big takeaway is just this feeling of things opening up and that there's going to be this huge investment, and how is that going to play out in our community? Mm-hmm. How are we going to see that on our main streets? How are we going to experience this? And you know, it's great to talk about all these things you and I were talking in the break, but how is that really going to play for us on our doorsteps? And I think that's the thing that's sort of the wait and see. And I think, you know, while I wouldn't breathe a huge sigh of relief that all of this is going to happen, I think that's where the big question mark is.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk about it in all sorts of terms back and forth, and this would work or that would work. But, you know, that's going to be the real litmus test.
Well, what we are seeing in this government is saying, and not in so many words, is we're going to see an increase in the public sector. We're going to see more jobs
mm-hmm.
at the federal government level. We're going to see increases because they're opening those veteran centers. They're opening mm-hmm. the Kitsilano Coast Guard station. They're increasing the number of workers at mm-hmm. support Canada, or increasing the number of people working for employment insurance so that people don't have to leave a telephone number and wait 48 hours for a callback. They're going to have live bodies. So I think that is something that is going to see that will impact the economy, I think, because we're seeing more. Again, they're high paid, well paid jobs, union jobs with benefits. Yes, they're government jobs, they're public sector jobs. But at this point, you know, we've got to get people back to work, and we've got to be able to provide services that Canadians have become accustomed to. Too often, people have complained about going into Service Canada centres and not being able to speak to anybody, or there's only one staff on duty, and you don't have, so there's nobody there to answer your questions. So hopefully that's going to be a fix. And I think perhaps what we may have seen, because, you know, one of the other things that didn't get talked about in this budget was Bombardier. And there doesn't seem to be an overwhelming willingness on the part of this government, at least not through this budget, to spend a whole lot of money on corporate infrastructure funding, or what I like to recall or refer to as corporate welfare. We didn't see a whole bunch of money being given to the oil and gas sector, for instance, for a so-called economic development or research and development. I mean, these are companies that have $1 billion a year, $1 trillion budgets that are earning more than enough money to pay for their own R&D. Thank you very much. And I don't think that, you know, what we've seen in the past, which is austerity for the masses, so that we can afford to pay for corporate welfare or the corporatocracy to receive this break and that break. I think we're starting to see a shift. Maybe this was just the first budget, and maybe it's my wishful thinking, but I think we're going to see a shift in where the burden lies when it comes to who's responsible for some of these things. You know, the other day there was a thing put out. Brad Wallace wanted $500 million to help pay for the cleanup of derelict oil wells and gas wells that have been just left by industry. You know, I'm glad to see that the federal government didn't pony up any money for that, because it's the industry itself, in my opinion, that should have to pay for those things. Why should taxpayers have to have their hard-earned tax dollars, which they, I mean, let's face it, we pay taxes so that we can get services from the government. When people tell us, you know, oh, you get a free hospital or free health care, it's not free. We pay for it through our taxes. We pay for infrastructure through our taxes. We pay for public housing through our taxes. Universities, education, all of those things are paid for through our taxes. And if we are taking tax dollars from those services to give $3 billion a year to the Canadian Association of Petroleum Producers, or $100 million for this sector, or $1 billion to Bombardier, that's money that's coming out of those services that Canadians expect to get, because that's what they're paying for. They don't expect to see austerity as an excuse for them to be able to give out those kinds of benefits.
But, you know, and you can't expect everything to be done in the first budget, but certainly things like universal daycare, pharmacare, transfers to the health sector for for the provinces, those kinds of things haven't been addressed. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing or a good thing, but those are things that, again, are sitting out there that are major commitments by this government. They can't do everything in the first round budgets, but I mean, those are all question marks that are sitting out there.
Well, and those things, as you say, they are in the ether, because we need to remember something else, listeners. I mean, the health accord expired in March of last year. Now, there was an extension put on it by the then finance minister, because he kicked his budget down the road to April or May. But that that accord has expired. We have not seen what this government proposes to do in lieu of that expiration. So lots of stuff to wait for. We are looking to see huge deficits. But again, I want to remind people that the deficit, you know, it's like when Bob Rae got blamed for the huge deficit in Ontario. You know, you don't inherit a government that is supposed to be in surplus, find out 5 months later that you're hugely in the hole and that you're the guy who has to own it.
Here's the thing that'll make the difference, is if people are sitting at home right now and they can say to themselves a year from now, they feel that things have gotten better, then nobody will care about how much the deficit is.
Absolutely.
But what will matter is if they don't feel that things have changed, then it's going to be a big problem.
It's true. It's true. And it could be a little too much, too little, too late by then. Speaking of which, here's Johnny Mathis and Denise Williams with Too Much, Too Little, Too Late right here on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. I'm Dave Glover. This has been The Drive Time, folks. We don't write the world. We just report it.
Guess it's over. Sorry that it had to end this way. No reason.
reason to pretend. We knew it had to end someday. This way.
Guess it's over. The kicks are gone. What's the use of trying to hang on? Somewhere we lost the key. So little left for you and me. And it's clear to see. Too much, too little, too late.
Too much, too much.